You know, for years, it was always about the Raw after WrestleMania. Like, the Raw after WrestleMania was always this big show. There was always something big going on. You'd have some debuts. They would shoot, like, a major angle. It was a happening. It's like a big party. Well, we haven't really had that in the last few years. I can't remember the last time we had, like, a truly great, memorable Raw after WrestleMania. After tonight, it might have to turn into the Raw after SummerSlam. Because what we got tonight in the fallout from SummerSlam was one of the best WWE shows of the entire year. And that doesn't just go for Raw. That goes for Raw, SmackDown, any of their weekly shows. This tonight was easily one of the best Raws, maybe the best, but certainly one of the best Raws of 2024. We had a lot going on this show tonight. It was a very focused show. They progressed some of the existing stories coming out of SummerSlam. They started new ones, and they established some new faces on the show tonight. We had, for the first time in the main event, the Wyatt Six. This was their first match tonight. The in-ring debut for Eric Rowan, Joe Gacy, and Dexter Lumis. We had Uncle Howdy and Nikki Cross, Abby the Witch, sitting at ringside watching. And you know, with the Wyatt Six, presentation is so important. Presentation has a lot to do, really, with what the Wyatt Six is all about, from the opening piano key to the lighting and the, you know, spooky entrance and the lantern and everything that we saw tonight. Presentation is a very big part of what they do. But tonight, it was time to put up or shut up. We were going to see them in the ring for the first time and see exactly what we're going to get from the Wyatt Six. And what we got, I thought, was a good main event. I thought that the presentation from start to finish tonight was very well done. I was curious how the match would come off, and I thought it came off well. Everybody in that main event had a chance to shine. Poor Chad Gable, still eating L's. He's got a new family now, the Creeds. Meet the new family, same as the old family. This guy just can't catch a break, but it wasn't about them. Main event was not positioned to be about them. It was about establishing the Wyatt Six. And to that end, I thought they did a good job. And I thought maybe that would be one of the biggest things coming out of Raw tonight, but boy, was I wrong. The Wyatt Six is maybe third or fourth from the top. There was a lot going on tonight. We have a new World Heavyweight Champion coming out of SummerSlam. His name is Gunther. And I was wondering, you know, what would the first program for him be? Because we are heading into the Bash in Berlin. So who would be challenging him for the title on that show? Would they go with a rematch with him and Damian Priest? Maybe work Finn Balor in there? That would be the easy way to go, just do a rematch. You've got other people kind of milling around. You've got Sami Zayn all of a sudden who has nothing to do. But, you know, Sami Zayn and Gunther for the World Heavyweight title, I mean, that's a PLE match. That's a PLE program for next year. You know, you don't rush into something like that right now. Ilya Dragunov. Look, nobody more so than me wants to see Gunther and Ilya Dragunov get 20 minutes or 25 minutes in a PLE match to go at it, let alone if they did the match in Berlin. That would be just an incredible atmosphere, an incredible match. But they haven't really positioned Dragunov in a way that made you think he was going to be contending for the World Heavyweight title anytime soon. So they threw us a curveball tonight. We now know who will be challenging Gunther, his first challenger for the World Heavyweight Championship, and it's nobody that anybody was guessing. Nobody would have really had a reason to think that this is what they would go with, but now we know it will be Randy Orton making his way over to the Raw brand this month so that he could challenge Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship in Berlin, and there's a very good reason why Randy Orton is traveling over from SmackDown to Raw. Not, I believe, on a permanent basis, but there's good reason, going back to the King of the Ring, why this match is taking place. The question, of course, is, was this always intended to be the case, or are they playing off something that happened in that King of the Ring match? We also have a lot of drama around the Judgment Day. The Judgment Day has been the dominant faction on Raw now for 2 years. It has imploded. After what we saw on Saturday, we saw Dominic Mysterio betray Rhea Ripley. Hell hath no fury like a Rhea scorned. He and Liv Morgan are now an item. We had Damian Priest losing his world championship thanks to Finn Balor, who put the knife in his back. So what would the Judgment Day look like coming into Raw tonight? That was one of the big themes, one of the big questions. The Judgment Day does still exist. It is the remnants of the Judgment Day with one new member, which is Dom's new main squeeze. So we basically have ourselves the Wolfpack version now of the Judgment Day. But yes, the Judgment Day is still a thing for those of you wondering. Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley are on the outside looking in, but they now come out of this as two of the biggest baby faces on Monday Night Raw. Rhea Ripley was already one of the biggest baby faces in the company anyway. But this crowd tonight, now where were they? Remind me again, where were they tonight? They were in Baltimore. They were in Baltimore. Ah, The Wire. Great TV show. They were in Baltimore, and I got to give my, hats off. I don't wear a hat, but if I did, I would take my hat off to the crowd tonight because they were awesome. This crowd was electric for most of the show tonight. And you could tell that the work that they have put into establishing Damian Priest in particular as a babyface, they didn't really have to do much work with Rhea Ripley. She was already well-liked. But as far as Damian Priest goes, the crowd has taken to him. They now see him as a babyface, and I think they see him now on a level that he was not at before he won that World Heavyweight Championship. So for all the people who dumped on him or dumped on the idea of him and Gunther at SummerSlam, that doesn't feel like a big match. Well, you know what? Sometimes the way that you can take somebody who you do not perceive to be a big enough name to be in a spot like that is by putting them in a spot like that. And that was an important step to help get Damian Priest to where he is now, where he is positioned here, whereas he used to be here. And it's working. And that was very evident from the crowd reaction to all of his stuff tonight on the show. The other big match at SummerSlam on Saturday was CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. That was CM Punk's first match back in the ring in 7 months. And he made it through. He survived. He did not come out on TV tonight with his arm in a sling. He did not have a cast on his leg. He did not come out on crutches. He did not come out in a wheelchair or a full body cast. He made it through. That's a good sign. Now we wait and see what happens in the next match. He came out tonight. He was actually in a good mood, even though he lost on Saturday, but he explained why in his promo. And it looked like we were going to get a confrontation head-to-head between him and Seth Rollins. Didn't work out that way. Instead, they threw us another little curveball here for Seth Rollins. And let me say this. This angle they shot with Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed, who has been aimlessly wandering around Monday Night Raw now for months with nothing in particular to do. And every week, it feels like he's walking into Adam Pearce's office and he's asking for an opportunity. He's asking for this. He's asking for that. And Adam Pearce is always, blowing him off, basically. He took matters into his own hands tonight. And when I say that he destroyed Seth Rollins, he fucking destroyed Seth Rollins. Tsunami. After tsunami, after tsunami, Seth Rollins left laying blood pouring from his mouth. Michael Cole losing his mind on commentary. Pat McAfee losing his mind on commentary. You could not have booked this any better than they did tonight. This was a huge night, the biggest night yet on Raw for Bronson Reed. That was my favorite part of the entire show. When we get to that segment and we talk about it, that right there was my favorite part of the night tonight. I thought that was fantastic. And a story that I would not call my favorite. I actually think it's been quite boring. This back and forth between the New Day and the Final Testament. It's given them something to do on this show, but this story has not exactly been riveting. They did something tonight that has piqued my interest. And for the first time, I am actually interested now in this New Day story. And it doesn't really involve the Final Testament. It really is focused mainly on the New Day. But we had a new face pop up on Raw tonight. It is a face that we have not seen in 2 years that this person has been drafted to Monday Night Raw. We have not even seen their face on this show until tonight. For the first time, we got an Odyssey Jones appearance on Monday Night Raw. I saw him coming down to the ring and I thought maybe he's just been lost this entire time. He finally found his way to the building. Hallelujah. Here he comes down the aisleway, Odyssey Jones. So when I say that we had new faces being established, he was the new face on Raw that we had not seen before. This show had a little bit of everything for everybody. And I feel like even if you are someone who doesn't think this was the best Raw of the year, I think you would probably come away from this show thinking, man, that was a damn good show. And there was a lot going on. All I ask out of Monday Night Raw, because it's a 3-hour show, and 3 hours, it's tough to book. It's tough to keep anybody's attention. It's tough to keep my attention for 3 hours. All I ask is that you give me an entertaining show where I'm not looking at my watch and it doesn't feel like 3 hours. And at no point tonight did this show feel like it was dragging. Did it feel boring? Did I look at the clock like, oh my God, I can't believe we have another 90 minutes of this? That's what I want to see out of Monday Night Raw. Triple H tonight gave us a little bit of everything. He tried to get as many people as possible on the show featured in a meaningful way. This is something that Chad Gable has talked about before. When he re-signed with the company, he made a comment about how Triple H tries to give everybody something on this show. He wants every single person on the roster to have a part to play. This show tonight, it felt that way more so tonight than any other show that I've seen so far during the Triple H regime, I guess you would say. And it established again that Raw right now is the number one show of the week. Now, SmackDown's going to have their chance on Friday, and we'll see what happens with Roman Reigns is going to be back on SmackDown this week, and we'll see what else they have up their sleeve. But all of the things that took place at SummerSlam had to happen to get these shows back on track, because these shows lately have just been lagging. They've been dull. It's like they fell off a fucking cliff the last couple of weeks. This is exactly what these shows needed, to breathe new life into them. I'm excited now. This is a great show. This is your Monday Night Raw review. It is August 5th, 2024. I am the Sala Monster. Thank you for joining me here on a Monday night. We're going to go through all of this stuff, and there is a lot of great stuff to go through. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. You will see them momentarily start popping up on your screen. I want to give a shout out to everybody who helped get the sound off back in the top 10 this weekend. All wrestling podcasts on Apple Podcasts here in the United States of America. Thank you very much. If you missed episode 873, please go ahead and check it out. It is available wherever you get your audio podcasts, which is pretty much everywhere. That's just the Apple charts. We're on Apple, Spotify, you name it, we're on there. So thank you again for all of the support. I appreciate it. We had a commercial-free first hour of Raw tonight. They were on Sci-Fi due to the Olympics for the second week in a row, the final time on Sci-Fi. So just FYI, they're back on USA next Monday. But it was a commercial-free 55 minutes to open the show tonight. Ludwig Kaiser is back. He was in the ring to introduce the new World Heavyweight Champion to the ring to open the show, the Ring General Gunther, on his way to the ring. That belt, let me tell you, man, that big gold, I call big gold. I mean, it's in the spirit of big gold. But that belt looks just right at home on his shoulder, doesn't it? Even Randy Orton couldn't help but comment on it when he came out. That World Heavyweight Championship, man, it looks like it was meant to be worn over this man's shoulder. So he got in the ring. He got a little pyro celebration in the background. He introduced himself to the audience, called himself the longest reigning intercontinental champion of all time, our king of the ring, and now our world heavyweight champion. He said, if we thought what he did with the IC title was historic, wait until what he does with the world heavyweight title. He said, nothing can catch him off guard. And I thought, what an odd line. Gee, I wonder what that means. Well, something caught him off guard because Randy Orton's music hit. This was an interesting little wrinkle that I guess I kind of did because it got spoiled about an hour before the show. But when I woke up this morning, I would not have told you that I expected Randy Orton to be confronting Gunther on the show tonight. But there he was. Down to the ring he comes. And even Gunther admitted that he was wrong because that actually did catch him off guard. Orton said that he was the only reason that Gunther was holding the world championship in the first place. He says, you beat me at the King of the Ring, but did you really? Did you really beat me? Orton reminded all of us that his shoulders were up off the mat during the pinfall at the end of the match, which they were. And we talked about it at the time when I reviewed the show. It was clear as day that when he got pinned, he should not have been pinned because his shoulders weren't down. So he said he's been there long enough in the company to know that the referee's decision is final, but even Triple H said that there should be a sequel. And so Orton was calling his shot now. Orton was the only one in the locker room, he said, that could match him. It was technician versus technician. Smooth versus smoother. I hope that's certainly in reference to their wrestling ability. Said the fans deserved a modern-day Flair versus Steamboat. And Gunther considered himself a living legend, and that was perfect because Orton said that he made a career out of killing legends. Orton planned on walking out of Gunther's home country, he said, as the world champion. Gee, I didn't know that the Bash in Berlin was taking place in Vienna this year. He did this twice, by the way, in this segment. He called Gunther German and said that he's wrestling in his home country in Berlin, even though he is not German. He is Austrian. I mean, this is like something that you would see, you know, in a Vince McMahon run WWE. Austria just doesn't sound mainstream enough, so we'll just call him German. It's all the same. That's fucking lame. So Gunther admitted that not beating Orton clean at the King of the Ring left a stain on his record. Said the voices in Orton's head were wrong if they thought they were telling him that he could beat Gunther in Berlin. He accepted Orton's challenge and they shook hands, and Gunther then pulled him in close so the crowd couldn't hear it, but we could. And he told him that nothing catches him out of nowhere. And Orton said he was fine with that because he wanted Gunther to see it coming. What I did not see coming was Randy Orton as the first challenger for him coming out of SummerSlam, but it makes absolute sense considering the botch at the King of the Ring. If that's what it was, I don't know if it was planned out that way, if it was really planned out well, and the entire time the idea was that we would end up right in the spot that we're in now, or again, if there was a botch with the finish of the match and they decided, you know what, we're going to play off of it, we're going to circle back around to this, and it'll all make storyline sense when we do. If so, bravo. And even if not, bravo. Because I'm all psyched up now to see Randy Orton and Gunther bash in Berlin for the World Heavyweight title. But if they are capitalizing on something like that happened, again, I love shit like that. Now, you have something like that happens, find a way to exploit it and take advantage of it and weave it into the story and make it even better. I like to think that's what they did here. Until it's proven otherwise, I'm going to assume that that's what happened here. But what I also love about it, you know, look, Triple H, he did say after the King of the Ring, he did a backstage interview that night after the show, and he said that the two of them would meet again. Now, he said, when the match happens, it's not going to affect the outcome of the tournament because Gunther is still King of the Ring. He's still going to get his championship match at SummerSlam. But he did say that there would be a part two. There would be a sequel at some point when Orton came back. So waiting until he won the title and then having Orton as his first challenger is actually very smart. The other thing also is, it gives the World Heavyweight Championship a big marquee, you know, challenger going into the show at the end of the month. Randy Orton is one of the biggest names in the company. You know, that's automatically a huge match. All due respect to an Ilya Dragunov, you know, that's not, as far as marquee value, that doesn't have the same marquee value that Gunther and Randy Orton has. So I like it. Because of that, it also makes sense that Triple H would allow Orton to cross over to the other brand. There was no trade. Okay, so there was never any mention of there being a trade. And I'm going to talk about something that happened earlier today with the two GMs. It didn't involve this. But it at least makes sense because Triple H already said this match is going to happen. It has to happen. And now it's happening. You know, he's allowing Randy Orton to cross the border, you know, into Raw. He's climbing over the wall to Raw, and now he's going to challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship without the need for there to be any sort of formal trade. If it is a one-shot deal, Orton can still go back to SmackDown when this is over, and he could still challenge Cody Rhodes for the WWE Championship. Now, initially, I thought that we were going to get a Gunther and Randy Orton rematch at Clash at the Castle. Like, when Triple H made that comment, I thought that's what everything was being geared towards. And they were going to do the match there, and then, you know, Gunther would have beat him again, and that would be the catalyst for Orton to snap and go heel, and then ultimately challenge Cody Rhodes at SummerSlam, back when I thought that was going to be the SummerSlam match, for the World Heavyweight Championship, or the WWE Championship. But a Randy Orton heel turn, it has to happen. It makes all the sense in the world, and I'm going to tell you why. The only thing you need to know, as far as why it makes sense and why I think this is where things are headed. Randy Orton came back to WWE at Survivor Series last year. He was part of the War Games match. He was on Team Cody, right? It was him and Cody and Seth and Sammy and Jay, and they won. Starting in January of this year, take a look at Randy Orton's record of PLE matches. He has not won a single match. He lost at the Royal Rumble. He lost at Elimination Chamber. He lost at WrestleMania. He lost at Backlash. He lost at the King of the Ring. He lost at Money in the Bank. Thanks to Cody, no less, who got pinned by Solo Sikoa. That's a pretty bad record. And at some point, you would have to think that Randy Orton is going to get sick and tired of losing. And something in his brain is going to snap. It's going to trigger. And we're going to get the old Randy Orton. We're going to get the Viper Randy Orton, heel Randy Orton, who's tired of losing. He's tired of being the nice guy. He's tired of being the friend, coming to other people's aid. It hasn't done him any good. He has lost every single big match he has had this year. And it's going to happen again in Berlin because he's going to go in there and he's going to lose to Gunther. And that is going to be the catalyst for the eventual Randy Orton heel turn and the eventual feud with him and Cody Rhodes on SmackDown for the WWE title. Makes all the sense in the world. All of this losing has to lead somewhere. All roads still lead to Cody Rhodes, in my opinion. So this is a very simple setup to the match in Berlin, but a nice little surprise here, and I'm happy that we're getting the match. We had Sheamus and Ludwig Kaiser one-on-one. They have a little bit of history. These two, no love lost. This was Kaiser's return to the ring from the broken rib or ribs that he suffered a few weeks ago. Sheamus was in control until Kaiser feigned another injury to the ribs on the outside, but he suckered Sheamus in for a cheap shot. Kaiser then did his jog around the ring for a running drop kick to Sheamus into the steel steps. He was sitting up against the steps. We had Sheamus doling out the 10 beats and then a flying clothesline from the top rope to the floor outside. So Pete Dunne, this is the second time now that Pete Dunne has attempted. First time he was successful. This time he was not. Trying to strike Sheamus with a shillelagh, but he missed. So Sheamus was able to dodge it, hit him with a knee strike. Kaiser, though, caught Sheamus off guard with a running kick when he got back into the ring, but he kicked out. Sheamus then followed with a brogue kick. And he picked up the win. Really good stuff here from these two. A win for Sheamus gives him some momentum before he heads into battle soon. Maybe Berlin against Pete Dunne. Although, honestly, you know, Sheamus and Pete Dunne, I don't think that's going to be a Berlin match. I mean, unless they just want to get... You know what? I take that back. I actually think there's a very good chance it ends up on the card in Berlin. And I'll tell you why. Ludwig Kaiser. Unlike Gunther... Kaiser actually is German-born, so that is going to be a homecoming for him, and I think that Triple H is going to want to get him a match on that show. I just can't figure out who it would be against unless he was worked into this feud. So I could see this turning into a triple threat match, and maybe we get something with Sheamus, Pete Dunne, and Kaiser to get him on the card. And frankly, maybe even get him a win, right? Because Sheamus and Pete Dunne, the issue is really between the two of them. They could cancel each other out. Ludwig Kaiser could come out of that a winner in Berlin. So that's kind of where I'm visualizing this going. Because otherwise, I'm not really sure there's an obvious opponent for him on the show. And I just would be very surprised if he ended up not being on that show in some way. They aired a cool video for the Wyatt Six, playing off the fact that the original Wyatt family debuted 11 years ago, also in Baltimore. After this, we had Damian Priest, the now former World Heavyweight Champion, marching with authority. He was in no mood, marching down to the ring faster than I have ever seen him before. He gets into the ring, and he immediately demands that Finn Balor come out and take his beating like a man. Priest talked about being on his own for most of his life until he found the Judgment Day. He could thank Adam Copeland for that. And they felt like family. But after seeing the reaction of the fans, he knew that they, all of us, were his new family. He wasn't so pissed off about the fact that Finn Balor cost him the World Heavyweight Championship because he said, I could just win it back, which, good luck with that. You ain't going to be tasting that World Heavyweight title for a while, so long as Gunther has that championship. And when Gunther eventually loses it, it ain't going to be back to Damian Priest. So he may be World Heavyweight Champion again one day, but that day is not going to be for a very long time. But he says, you know, I could always win the World Heavyweight title back. I'm not really so upset that you cost me the title. But what really upset him is the fact that he took the title from all of them, all of us. So he can't let that stand. Priest said that when Balor is suffering, he would know that he is the reason for the pain. Priest called for Balor to come out so that the beatings could begin. Finn Balor did not come out, but he did pop up on the big screen. He was sitting in darkness somewhere in the back. He said that Priest brought this on himself. Said Damian Priest betrayed the Judgment Day. Said they all have each other's backs. There are no leaders. That's the way it's supposed to be. We look out for each other. There is no singular leader of the Judgment Day. He said, though, that that all changed when Priest became the World Heavyweight Champion. A year ago, he, Finn Balor, almost became World Champion. But he lost. That was to Seth Rollins. And he said, what was it that you said to me to console me? He said, Priest told him, Finn, it's time to man up. And that really pissed off Finn Balor. So Balor said that he waited a full year to man up. So you're from the streets. Well, now you're just a loser from the streets. I'm not going to fight you. JD McDonough will. And if you really pay close attention, you could hear the audience when Priest said that. Oh man, that really was. That was comedy. You could sense it from the crowd. They were very amused by that line, as was I. But he said that JD McDonough will. He's going to wait until Priest feels safe and he's almost forgotten about him. And then when his back is turned, he says he'll be there to stab him in it again and again and again. And it won't be just him. He said, we all will. And the camera panned back and we saw Dominic walk in with Liv Morgan, who gave him a kiss on the cheek. JD McDonough was there. Carlito was there. So we have the new Judgment Day. It's the same as the old Judgment Day, but they've traded Rhea for Liv. And I guess they're down a member. They could always add somebody new. Right? You could always add somebody new to the Judgment Day, but right now the group does not look radically different than the way it looked before. We have the Wolfpack version of the Judgment Day now. Like I said, the fans, I think, found it about as funny as I did when he said that, when Balor said that, you're not going to get me, but you're going to get JD. Like he's some kind of threat. That was pure comedy. Oh, man. Hey, Raw's got drama. They've got love storylines playing out, and they've got comedy. And sometimes the comedy hits, and sometimes it doesn't. That was pretty funny. But it was indeed, you know, I'll tell you what I liked about this. This long-term vision that they had for this story and the way they tied it back to something that happened over a year ago. You know, Balor said that he waited a year. It's actually over a year. Because last year, Balor wrestled Seth Rollins, I believe, twice. I think it was Money in the Bank and SummerSlam. for the World Heavyweight Championship. What Priest was, or what Balor rather, was referring to there was the match of Money in the Bank last year. If you remember, Balor, he went up to the top rope. He was going for the coup de grace. Damian Priest had the Money in the Bank briefcase. He was outside the ring. I think he was sitting down. And he stood up. And I think I even commented on it in my review. Like, at that moment, why would he stand up? But he stood up. And it distracted Balor. You know, Balor's looking back at him like, what are you doing? And that hesitation, that distraction, ultimately is what cost Finn Balor his match. It's what cost him, potentially, the World Heavyweight Championship. And so I love it. I love the way that they took it all the way back. They weaved in that match from Money in the Bank over a year ago, 13 months ago. And Finn Balor has not been able to let it go, that this man cost him the title. So then you could think in your mind, imagine then when Damian Priest wins the title at WrestleMania and they're all happy for each other and everything. And Priest is being very assertive now. He's throwing his weight around as if he's the new leader of the Judgment Day, especially with Rhea being gone when she was hurt. And all of it makes sense, right? I mean, it all makes a lot of sense. See, he's been lying in wait. He's been playing the long game this entire time. He's been waiting for the right moment to strike. And it's not as if we didn't see this coming. I mean, they've dropped hints, some subtle hints and some not so subtle hints, especially since Damian Priest won the title of WrestleMania. These last several months, there have been a lot of backstage segments and interactions between them. And you look at Finn Balor, his facial expression or a comment that he would make. I mean, all the hints were there, but to tie it back to Money in the Bank last year is fucking great. I mean, you talk about a long-term story. The way they were able to tie it back all the way to that match, I think, it just makes it that much better. And I wish, I really do wish that they could find a way to delay this match until WrestleMania. I don't think it's going to be possible. Anything's possible, but my guess is it happens at Bad Blood. And, you know, given the title of the show, it would kind of make sense, right? Bad Blood, you do the first match between Finn Balor and Damian Priest. They may have to because they may be setting up for something at War Games with them, maybe. And not even necessarily a War Games match, but something involving, you know, Priest and Balor and the Judgment Day members. So, you know, I get it if they can't hold off on that first singles match until WrestleMania, but just, you know, given the kind of the deep history between these two and the way they've been able to tie it back to those earlier days, it really is a match and a story that is WrestleMania worthy. So if they could, if we were a little bit closer, I'd say just find a way to hold off on it, really build to it. Because think about what Balor said in the promo here, right? You're not going to get me. I'm going to make you wait. I'm going to make you wait so long that you almost forget about me. And right at the moment that you almost forget about me, that's when I'm going to strike, right? And I'm thinking, man, if they could just hold off on that until Mania, you know, or maybe in the Royal Rumble, Damian Priest, he's tossing guys out left and right over the top rope, and then Finn Balor is the one who sneaks up behind him and eliminates him and reminds him, right, you forgot about me, and then you build on the road to WrestleMania. I don't know if they could do it or not, but I kind of wish they would. Adam Pearce was on the phone backstage. This actually turned out to be a pretty important segment here. He was on the phone. Bronson Reed showed up. And Reed said that I beat Sheamus last week, and he was very upset about Sheamus having a match tonight. Anyway, he said that Pierce always has an excuse, and if he wants to get to the top, then he's going to have to take matters into his own hands. And off he went. And it just kind of came across like one of those benign backstage interactions. But boy, he wasn't lying when he said he was going to have to take matters into his own hands.
I am the learning tree.
NWO Matt.
Thanks, guys.
His second learning tree of the night, I think. Unless that was him that did the other one. I think that was somebody else. But Matt, thank you. And William Valencia, thank you for the $10 super chat. There are special amounts that trigger some of these specific ones. If you're new here, just check the description down below. But anybody who supports, again, I always appreciate it. And hit that thumbs up button as well. If we get enough of those, we'll do our Be the Booker segment at the end of the stream, which is always fun. Lyra Valkyria against Shayna Baszler.
I am the learning tree.
Well, that is number three for Matt.
Thanks, guys.
I was confused before, but I'm not confused anymore. Matt, thank you again. Yet another learning tree here during the stream. Chris Jericho never has to go back to WWE. He already gets more airtime on the WWE streams, I think, than he does my AEW ones. So Michael Cole said that he learned something interesting or weird about Shayna Baszler. I did not know this. Said that Shayna is a big soup, I guess, aficionado, you would say. She scours the internet for, I guess, different recipes for different types of soup. And she makes soup. I love soup. Shayna and I would get along real well. I'm a big chicken noodle soup guy myself. Chicken noodle soup is the best soup. You want the key to my heart? You make me some chicken soup? Oof. You'd be in my good graces. I don't know why he mentioned this. I have no idea. I thought she was going to throw fucking soup in her face at the end of the match, like scalding hot soup, but okay. Interesting little fact to know. I'm not really sure how that plays into anything, but okay. Does she like wrestling? Oh, you know what? That's a good... She probably loves wrestling soup. That's right. Shout out to Mish and Joey. Shayna Baszler cooking up some wrestling soup. I didn't even think of that. So this did not go very long before Lyra hit her Nightwing finish. Zoe Stark ran in for the disqualification. Damage control ran out. They cleared Zoe and Shayna and Sonya Deville from the ring as the two groups continue their recent feud. I think Michael Cole later in the show said that they were fighting to find out who would have control of Raw. And I'm like, control of Raw? How about none of the above? They're fighting for the mid-card on Raw. Control of Raw. Give me a break. That's like him calling Logan Paul's reign of three title defenses in 9 months. Incredible. I mean, come on now. The hyperbole is a little ridiculous here. So Lyra was on the verge of a win before the interference, so at least she had the chance to look strong here. Crowd was more receptive to damage control in the babyface role this week as compared to last week. Last week, it just felt like people didn't know what to make of them one way or the other, because there was never any kind of turn. They really haven't done anything to get in the good graces of the fans. But this week, they were kind of picking up on the idea that, okay, I guess we're supposed to cheer for them. So Ivy Nile met the Creed brothers in the back. They were all talking, and she asked them to leave when Maxine Dupri walked up. Maxine wondered why she hadn't heard from her and said that the Creeds had been attacking Otis and Tozawa now for weeks. And Ivy tried to reason with her and said that the Creeds have a switch. It just goes off sometimes. Not the Nintendo one. Chad Gable showed up, told Maxine to leave. He told her that they could keep the Alpha Academy name. He said he and the Creeds would beat the Wyatt Six tonight. That's him and his new family. I don't need you anymore. I have a new family now. CM Punk made his way down to the ring for a promo to address the audience here. And I thought to myself as I watched him, you know, walking down to the ring, I said, this man looks awfully happy for someone who lost on Saturday, lost to his most hated rival, a man who's been torturing him now for, you know, the better part of 7 months or 8 months now. He said that he would address that. He would address why he was looking so happy in a minute. But first, he wanted to congratulate the new UFC welterweight champion on his recent win. He says he likes it when good things happen to good people. So Punk said that he was happy because he had not been to Baltimore, I think he said, in 10 years. He said getting there was no guarantee. He said some fans love him because when he gets knocked down, he gets back up. He says some people in the company hate him because he doesn't stay down. Punk said the night was not guaranteed tonight. Him being here tonight was not guaranteed because of the injury that he suffered at the Royal Rumble. Punk said that he was told the injury would sideline him for 9 months. He was able to make it back in 5. He put over McIntyre's size, called him a tough son of a bitch. He took issue with McIntyre telling lies about me to make him feel better about himself. And he said he's happy because he's back. He came back at SummerSlam. He's back now. And he said this is just the beginning. Punk said his road to WrestleMania began at SummerSlam. He asked where would he be if he had stayed down when he lost a match or a championship. He said his summer did not start the way he wanted, but it is still summer. And the fans in Baltimore deserve less talking from CM Punk and more fighting from CM Punk. And they liked the sound of that. He said he wanted round two with Drew McIntyre. So Seth Rollins' music interrupted Punk, who showed frustration. As soon as Rollins' music hits, like, he's always very exasperated. Like, as soon as he hears the opening chords of Rollins' theme, he's like, oh my God. I remember once Punk, he literally dropped to his knees in the middle of the ring. Here he was, I forgot what he said, but he was exasperated when Rollins walked out. And Rollins did not come out tonight in some kind of fancy, whacked out, bright colored suit. He wasn't in his puffy referee shirt from last week. He walked out. He was wearing a black leather jacket. He looked very stoic and very serious. And he also said that he, too, was in a good mood. After 10 long years, it's time for me to put you in the dirt. Rollins went to go enter the ring to go walk up the steps. Punk, though, was standing in his way near the corner. Rollins asked if he was going to let him in. Punk said, well, I'm not the one dressed like a cowboy, but I'd let you be my Huckleberry. Shout out to Dusty Rhodes. So they were about to square up when Drew McIntyre interrupted. We heard his voice. We didn't see him. But then there he was. He was up in the stands. And he said, Punk brought the fight on Saturday and proved that he still got it. But he's no longer the best in the world. I am, he said. They weren't even looking at him. They were burning a hole in each other, Punk and Rollins. Like, it's like they weren't even paying attention to McIntyre. And so Drew pointed out the bracelet that was on his wrist that he said had his stupid dog Larry's name on it and Punk's wife's name, AJ, on it. So when he mentioned that, that's what finally set off Punk. By the way, I don't believe that this is the first name drop or mention of AJ. I think it's all but guaranteed we're going to get an AJ Lee appearance before this feud is over. I do, even if it's just in the crowd. I just feel like name-dropping her and the bracelet and making her a thing here in this feud, it's all going to culminate in her making an appearance of some kind on TV. Or Bad Blood, or at some point between now and then. So anyway, that was enough to piss off Punk. He made a beeline out of the ring into the crowd. McIntyre took off before he could catch up to him. So that left Seth Rollins all by himself in the ring. And this is where things really picked up. Rollins is all by himself. He turns around or goes to, almost turn around. And he gets ambushed from behind by Bronson Reed. Reed put Rollins down with the Death Valley driver. I mean, Rollins tried to put up a fight. He put up a little bit of a fight, but he got put down with the Death Valley driver. And Reed then followed up with not one, but two running sentons. Reed went up top, and he hit the tsunami splash. Squashed him like a bug. But that wasn't enough. He goes back up to the top rope, and he hits a second tsunami splash. Now this brings out referees, and this brings out producers. I think I saw Pat Buck and Sean Devari and Jason Jordan were out there. So they're all out there now trying to stop the mayhem. Reed left the ring, but then he returned and he hit a third tsunami splash. And then a fourth. And then a fifth. And it was to the point where I lost track. I didn't know if it was five or six. I had to go back and rewind it. So he hits five of them. All the while, I'm thinking, why don't the referees just roll him out of the way? Like, he's laying there, and they're all standing there going, no, 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 as Reed is up on the top rope. They should roll him out of the way to safety, like a rug, but they didn't do it. So Rollins is still laying there, and they left him to die. And so Reed goes back up to the top rope and he hits a sixth tsunami splash, half a dozen splashes from a man that is every bit of 350 off the top rope, squashing Seth Rollins. And the crowd is cheering now. Each time he is going up to the top rope, you know, he's the heel. Rollins is the babyface. They sing his song, right? That's really all they give a shit about. They don't give a shit about Seth Rollins. They just care about his stupid, shitty song. This man is being murdered in the middle of the ring, and every time Bronson Reed goes back up to the top rope, they cheer, and they get even more animated than they were for the previous one. And actually, by the time they finally rolled Rollins out of the way, they booed. They booed because they wanted him squashed again. So evidently, the relationship, the bond between Seth Rollins and these fans is not quite as strong as maybe he would have expected it to be. But Rollins is laying on the mat. He's coughing up blood, right? You see this blood on the mat. He's got blood on his lips. So finally, Bronson Reed leaves the ring. And then he comes back again. He climbs back up onto the apron and he proceeds to climb to the top rope for what would have been the seventh tsunami splash. But finally, all of these referees and these agents realize, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we should roll him out of the way. So finally, they rolled him. I bet if RVD were there, he would have fucking rolled him. It wouldn't have taken them fucking six times to figure it out. So they roll him out of the way to the opposite side of the ring. So Reed just sits down on the top turnbuckle with his arms crossed like this, looking like King Kong. Just admiring all of the carnage and all the mayhem and all the damage that he has caused. This segment, honestly, it gave me Vader and Monsoon vibes from 96. If you remember Vader's debut on Monday Night Raw, it was the night after the Royal Rumble. I think he had a match with Savio Vega. And Gorilla Monsoon at the time was the storyline president of the WWF. And he attacked Monsoon. Because Monsoon put his hands on him first to try to calm him down. And, you know, so Vader just said, hey, all right, hey, you put your hands on me and fuck you. I'm going to put my hands on you. And he attacked Monsoon and he gave him a Vader bomb, right? But he only gave him one. It's not like he gave him seven of them or six of them. But this gave me Vader and Monsoon vibes because he attacks this man and he gives him these splashes. And like, I remember Vince McMahon on commentary was, you know, obviously really selling it big. Michael Cole on commentary and Pat McAfee, but more so Michael Cole, I thought did a tremendous job on commentary, really selling this, and he's putting it over in a panicked way. You know, somebody's got to stop this. This guy's out of control. And I just thought he did a really good job of putting over the enormity of what we were seeing and the beating that he was giving Seth Rollins. I mean, the man is literally laying on the mat bleeding. You know, they're talking about internal bleeding and all this. The announcing can add so much to a moment like this, and this was a great example of why. So I got to compliment the announcers and Cole in particular on the job they did here. I loved everything about this. I thought this was fucking great. Bronson Reed warned Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce gives him the cold shoulder. He gives him the runaround. He always has excuses for him. And Reed finally said, all right, you know what? I see what I have to do here. If I want to climb my way to the top, I'm going to have to make a statement. I'm going to have to take it for myself and do something on my own. And then two segments later, or three segments later, he followed through on that promise. And that's exactly what he did here to Seth Rollins. If I have to make it to the top, I guess the smartest thing to do would be to go out there and take out one of the biggest stars in the entire show. And that's who he targeted. He did. He could have targeted anybody he wanted to. He targeted Seth Rollins, who is one of the biggest stars on Monday Night Raw. Reed is someone on this roster who has been meandering around aimlessly now for months with no real direction. You know, he's had matches, not every week, but he's been featured, but not featured in any meaningful way, right? You don't want to be featured by showing up and saying hi and then bye. You want to be doing something. You want to be in a program with somebody, if not challenging for a championship. And they just didn't have him doing anything. This is how you reestablish him as a threat. Gunther is the World Heavyweight Champion. Bron Breakker is the Intercontinental Champion. Two heels. Okay? And in the case of Gunther, I think he's worked with him before already. He's not touching the Intercontinental or the World Heavyweight title anytime soon. Okay? So he's basically locked out of those two top championships on the brand. And so, if he's not going to be involved with either one of them, then what do you do with him? Well, he can still be an important part of the show. Just get him in there with somebody who's important and give him something to do. Have him make a statement in some way. This was a statement by Bronson Reed on this show. And the fans reacted big to it, and again, they had to take Rollins out of there like he was half dead. I just thought everything they did here was excellent. Rollins needs to disappear for at least a few weeks. I know the way things are now in wrestling, you know, he'll probably be back in a week. He needs to be out for at least 2 weeks before you bring him back. Because I was thinking, okay, when do they do the match, right? Maybe not Berlin, right? But Berlin is what makes sense. Berlin is what makes sense. They don't have another big show until Bad Blood. The way they did this, this feels like a PLE match. This should not just be a TV match. So Berlin is probably going to be it. I would keep Rollins off TV for about 2 weeks before he shows up again and then make the match official for that show. I think Rollins and Reed is going to be great. I think that's going to be a great match. You can get at least one match, if not two, out of it. And the other thing that this does for now is it separates CM Punk and Seth Rollins. Because clearly he has unfinished business with Drew McIntyre. And we're going to get one or two more matches with Punk and McIntyre. So Rollins and Punk could be its own standalone feud. Rollins and Punk could be a WrestleMania match. This, for the time being at least, puts some separation between them, because when he comes back, Rollins will now be preoccupied with somebody else. Punk can go on and continue his business. So it really works on all levels here. This was great. I love this segment. Backstage, Jackie Redmond asked Adam Pearce for an update on Seth Rollins. This was a little bit later. Pearce said that it didn't look good, and Rollins would be on his way to the hospital because there was a fear that he might have internal bleeding. Michael Cole correctly pointed out, like, the guy was fucking bleeding from his mouth. I think he's got internal bleeding. At least he didn't say anal bleeding. So CM Punk is storming through the backstage area. He comes upon Adam Pearce. He wants to know, where is Drew McIntyre? Pierce tells him, look, I already walked him out of the building. And I thought Punk was going to choke him. I thought he was like looking at Pierce like he was Jack Perry. I was like, uh-oh, he better get out of there. But Pierce walked away, and Punk was left to stew in his own emotions. We had the New Day against the Authors of Pain, with Karrion Kross and Scarlett in their corner at ringside. Speaking of Michael Cole, you forgot about that infamous Michael Cole moment on Monday Night Raw, where Vince McMahon told him to let everybody know that Jerry Lawler was suffering from anal bleeding. I don't miss those days. Shout out to Patricia, who just subscribed to the channel. Poor Patricia subscribes to the channel at the moment that I mention anal bleeding. And a picture of Kevin Nash as a sperm pops up on screen. Patricia is probably now gone from the channel. It was nice knowing you. Your timing could not be any worse. But you never know, though. Maybe Patricia, hey, she's a very laid-back gal. Maybe she doesn't care. Maybe she finds it funny. But of all the moments for a new subscriber, for a new female subscriber to pop up, Patricia's like, where did the algorithm lead me? Oh, my God. Well, if she wasn't gone before, she's gone now.
Thanks, guys.
I'd be gone if it wasn't my own channel. Oz and Glorious, thank you very much for the Learning Tree Super Chat. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. When you check a bag at the airport, I'm sure most of you put a lock on your bag. Those of you who don't, you really need to start, because you never know when some creepy dude may rummage through your personal belongings. Even some of those TSA agents, I don't trust them. Going online without ExpressVPN is basically the same thing. You wouldn't want people going through your private data either. So the best thing you can do is protect yourself. Your internet service provider knows every single website that you visit. And in the U.S., ISPs are legally allowed to sell that information to advertisers. It's crazy. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure encrypted servers so your ISP can't see your browsing history. Now that I like. You want to know why ExpressVPN is the best VPN? Here's why. It hides your IP address. That makes it nearly impossible for third parties to track your online activity. It's also easy to use. You just fire up the app and click one button to get protected. And it's rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. When I use ExpressVPN, it's not to stay private every now and then. It's whenever I'm doing anything important. So I could be paying bills, submitting documents. I had to scan in my driver's license not too long ago for something. I had documentation that had my social security number on it. You know, stuff that I don't want falling into the wrong hands. The least I can do is push a button and protect myself from prying eyes. That's why it's important for me to be able to use the app. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster, and you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. So Kofi and Woods, they were dressed like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They were wearing Ninja Turtles-inspired gear. Now, why would they be dressed up as Ninja Turtles? Because WWE has partnered with Nickelodeon, for those who don't know, to release some WWE Ninja Turtle crossover action figures. Ninja Turtles were my jam when I was a kid. I was a big... Yeah, I go through these phases as a kid. I was never a G.I. Joe guy, but I was a He-Man guy, a Thundercats guy. God, what else? But the Turtles were huge. I watched every episode of the cartoon from 87, the 87 cartoon. I mean, there's been like 50 million fucking Ninja Turtle cartoons now, and they have different animations. It's like anime now. It just looks like shit. But like, the 87 cartoon, the movies, I still maintain the second movie I enjoyed more than the first. First is a great movie, very dark movie. But the second movie is still my favorite. The third one we won't talk about. We don't talk about that one. Secret of the Ooze. That's my jam right there. Kevin Nash suiciding himself at the end of that movie will never not be funny. So Karrion Kross interfered. He knocked Xavier Woods off the top rope, which allowed Rezar. Boy, it's funny. I mentioned the Ninja Turtles, and I talk about Rezar, right? We had Reza and Toka in the second Ninja Turtles movie. Every time I see Rezar, I just can't help but not think of that movie. Michael Cole called the referee a goof for missing Karrion Kross knocking Xavier Woods off the top rope, even though the referee's back was turned because Scarlett jumped up on the apron. Who among us would not be distracted if Scarlett jumped in front of us? Okay, so let's cut the guy some slack. All of a sudden, as this is going on, Odyssey Jones marches down to the ring. And as I said at the beginning of the review, I thought maybe he was lost for the past 2 years. And only now did he finally use, you know, Waze to find his way to the building, because this is a man who was drafted to Monday Night Raw in the draft in 2023 and never made a single appearance. And then he was drafted again to Monday Night Raw this year. And up until tonight, never made a single appearance. But now he finally has arrived. And Odyssey Jones, he hits the ring. Or the ringside area. He tosses Karrion Kross over the barricade into the crowd. And in the ring, Woods rolled up a distracted Rezar for the win. Now, AOP attacked Woods after the bell. Jones came back in. He made the save. He actually got each member of AOP under his arm in a side slam position and held them there at the same time for like a good 3 or 4 seconds. These are big fucking guys. And I'm sure they were, you know, supporting as best they could. But still, that takes a lot of power. And then he dropped them for a double side slam. Kross attacked him from behind. And he ended up giving Karrion Kross a great-looking boss man slam, or black hole slam, whatever you want to call it. Kofi comes into the ring. He celebrates with Jones. He's all pumped up. Xavier Woods, a lot more reserved in his demeanor. Like, he didn't know about this. He wasn't clued in that this was happening. I like the move. I would caution people who were making comments about, you know, him replacing Big E. And, yeah, I'm sure some people are going to like the idea. Some people are going to think it's, you know, disrespectful, or which it's not. I mean, shut up. That's ridiculous. People are going to have different opinions about this and what they think. I would caution people that they need to wait and see how it plays out. Based on Woods' reaction, as far as whether or not Odyssey actually ends up being a third permanent member of the New Day, because in the back after, there was a backstage segment, Woods said he didn't know that the two of them were friends. And Kofi said, oh, yeah, when I was at the PC, you know, I was healing up from my injury and I was getting ready for my comeback. And I met up with Odyssey and we got to know each other a little bit. And then Odyssey said that, you know, Woods, he heard from Kofi that he and Woods needed some help against the Final Testament, and so he wanted to offer his services and be of help to the both of them. Just watching Xavier Woods in this segment, you could tell that something was off. Something was definitely off here. There's another story playing out here. I don't know if the angle is going to be that Woods is upset that Jones is effectively taking Big E's spot, and that upsets him. And then maybe we get Big E on TV. Not necessarily in action, but Big E is around all the time. Big E was just there at SummerSlam on Saturday. He was, you know, at the pre-show panel and everything. So Big E could absolutely be brought in as a character on TV for a segment or for a series of segments. Who's to say that Big E does not get worked into this story? That would be an interesting direction to go in. Or it may not have anything to do. Big E may not even be mentioned. It could be a case where this plays into what Karrion Kross has been saying to Xavier Woods. To try to break up the New Day, to try to drive a wedge between him and Kofi. Kofi doesn't care about you. Kofi only cares about himself. And here's yet another example of Kofi not even cluing you in and not even telling you and just doing something without clearing it with you first or giving you a heads up. It feeds into that story. I didn't think when this whole thing started, realistically, that they would break up the New Day. This now, all of a sudden, throws an interesting little wrinkle into the New Day story that was not there before. This has gotten my interest in a way that everything they have done up to this point has failed to do. All of a sudden, I'm interested. They have my attention now. I want to know where this is going to go. So, we shall see. For those who don't know about Odyssey Jones, he's a very charismatic guy. Got a great personality. He'll get over very easily, just based on that alone. He's similar to Big E in that way. Big E is a very charismatic guy. He's a very wacky guy. Odyssey Jones is cut from the same cloth. So, I don't see him having an issue getting over in front of the audience. And the power spots, you know, the stuff that he did here, he looked very impressive, you know, for the limited stuff that he did here in this segment. He can absolutely be a big star. But it's just been a running joke for so long now that he was drafted twice and had never made a single appearance on TV. And then when you hear about these releases that happen from time to time, I always expected that he would end up on the list one of these times because it just felt like they had nothing for him. It's kind of like Dijak, right? He got drafted to Raw. They didn't have a plan for him, so they let his contract run out. And I was starting to think that Odyssey Jones was going to end up on the same list, and I'm happy that he's not. I'm happy they finally found something for him to do. I hope Xavier Woods does go heel. I hope he does split from Kofi. The New Day has been together now for a decade. And obviously, they're one member short. Now, you can always add a new member like Odyssey Jones, and he'll add a little something new to the group. But the New Day, it's been so long. And they have had nothing of any meaning or substance for them to do. I think the best thing would be to play the story out and have Woods make the choice that, you know what? Kross was right about you. And have them split. And let him go off and do his own thing for a while. And then eventually you can reunite them. You can have a New Day reunion, and there'll be interest in a New Day reunion if you keep them apart. Because it's like the old expression, how can you miss me if I never go away? I think to get to that point, they need to go their separate ways, whether it's a full-on betrayal. We've had a lot of betrayal on television recently. We had two different betrayals in the same faction on Saturday. However they want to work it, I hope it happens. I think it would help freshen things up a lot as far as the New Day goes. And boy, they could use it. We had Awesome Truth against Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. In a video earlier today, Adam Pearce said that he had worked out a deal with the SmackDown general manager, Nick Aldis. Part of that deal involved sending Waller and Theory to Raw tonight to compete in a match. Which begs the question, why? Why? But that was the deal that he made. We don't know what Nick Aldis gets in return. Now, my first thought is probably very similar to your first thought, I'm sure, many of you, that Sami Zayn, who lost the Intercontinental title on Saturday, and Jey Uso, who didn't even have a match, didn't even show up at SummerSlam, we're going to be paired off and go after the tag team titles, go after the Bloodline on SmackDown. Now, how they would get there, they would have to explain the why behind it. After the segment that aired a little bit later on in the show, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case, but we'll talk about that when we get there. The key spot here in this match, though, was R-Truth hoisting up Grayson Waller in such a way that it caused Waller's legs to hit Miz in the face, and then he tumbled out of the ring. Yeah, it's funny, they did a spot like that at the Survivor Series back in 91 with the Rockers. It's part of what led to their fracture on the barbershop. So Theory hit A-Town Down on R-Truth and pinned him. After the match, Miz helped Truth up to his feet and then shook his hand and hugged him. But the split is coming. It's very clear now. The split for Awesome Truth is on the way. Miz will be a heel again shortly. Awesome Truth has been played out now for months. It's long overdue. You know, they had that great moment at WrestleMania. I was happy for Truth. And 2 weeks later, I was already over it. So here we are now in August. I think the time has come. Kathy Kelly was in the back to interview Bron Breakker, the new Intercontinental Champion. And she asked him if he was prepared for the onslaught of superstars who were coming for the title. Braun noticed how many wrestlers like to talk about how long they've held the title for. How many days, how many years. Said it's been under 3 years since he debuted on WWE television, including NXT. And it took less than 3 years to win the Intercontinental title. As far as he's concerned, he was the hunter and everybody else is the hunted. I'm coming for everyone, he said. He felt sorry for everybody else. A lot of people thought he was born for this moment, but he wasn't. The title was born for him. And he showed us the nameplate on the side that had his name on it and said that no man could take his name off of his title. Well, then he better hope he doesn't run into somebody with a screwdriver, because it'd be pretty easy to take his name off that title. He's lucky that the Callis family is over in AEW. You know, Don Callis is running around with that fucking screwdriver, so he's lucky they're over there. Although, Bron Breakker against Konosuke Takeshita would be a fucking great match. Maybe one day. Maybe one day. I see some news floating around about the Lucha Bros, which is very interesting. Potentially coming over to WWE, although that is not confirmed yet. We had Damian Priest one-on-one with JD McDonagh. Before the break, McDonagh hit a dive out to the floor through the ropes, smacked his head right on the edge of the announce desk. That could have been bad. That could have ended very badly. Priest was too preoccupied with Carlito outside, so McDonagh shoved him into the ring post and hit a suicide dive, which led to what I just mentioned. After a break, Priest hit a flatliner and no-sold McDonough's slaps. Priest hit a falcon arrow. McDonough rolled outside, so Priest went out after him, shoved him backwards over the announce desk before rolling him back in the ring. Priest set up for a choke slam, but Finn Balor attacked him from behind for the disqualification. Priest sat up upon seeing Balor, but everybody swarmed Damian Priest. Now we had Dominic Mysterio came out with Liv Morgan. Carlito is there, JD McDonagh, Finn Balor. And they're all just putting the boots to Damian Priest. Priest fought them all off, cleared the ring until it was just him and Finn Balor. Balor realized, oh shit, I got to get out of here. And he went to go leave, but Priest grabbed him and he set him up for the razor's edge. Liv Morgan, though, pulled Balor, he yanked on his leg and pulled him down to safety and he escaped. So then Liv got in Priest's face, or his chest, I guess. Dominic chop blocked him from behind. They swarmed Priest again when Rhea Ripley's music hit. Place went crazy. What a fucking pop for Rhea Ripley when she came out. Dom and Morgan tried to run away. Dominic made it into the crowd. I love how he left Liv Morgan behind. He's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Now, normally, you know, if your chivalry is not totally dead, I would like to think, and you would think that, like, he would tell her, get in front of me, right? Like, you go in front, I'll be in the back. Nope, he just zipped on out of there. So he was able to escape. Liv Morgan was not as fortunate, and Rhea Ripley caught up to her before she can make it into the crowd. So she sent Liv Morgan into the ring post, and she sold it like death. Then she cleared off the announce desk and set Liv up for the razor's edge of her own. When Dominic came back, grabbed Liv's legs, pulled her down to safety, and the two of them fled into the crowd. But we were not done yet. We were not done yet because now people are going crazy for all this, right? This is a hot segment here, and then they cut back to the ring, and there's still action going on in the ring, even though the match is over, because JD McDonagh is in there fighting with Damian Priest. Rhea Ripley gets into the ring. McDonagh ends up getting kind of shoved, and he spins around, and now he's face-to-face with Rhea. And Rhea ends up giving him a headbutt. Priest gave McDonagh, I shit you not, the biggest fucking chokeslam I have ever seen in my life. I have seen a lot of great chokeslams, okay? Kane, when Kane was at his physical prime, I'm talking prime Kane, like fucking 2000 Kane, 2001, when this guy was just, he was like a fucking statue, this guy. He would dole out one-handed chokeslams like they were nothing, okay? The best chokeslam I had ever seen before was actually The Undertaker to Brock Lesnar, of all people. Brock Lesnar, back in 2003, I think it was in a dark segment. Brock Lesnar, man, he got such hype on this chokeslam. Might have been right before their chain match. I think they had like a chain match or something at No Mercy. The height that he got on that chokeslam, I never forgot that. This may have been the best chokeslam I've ever seen, seriously. And a lot of that had to do with JD McDonagh. And I have to give McDonagh a lot of credit here because we joke about like McDonagh facing Priest, like what, you know, please give me a break, right? Because that's the way he's portrayed, right? He's portrayed, I don't want to say a jobber. He's not a jobber. He's one half of the tag team champions, but he's not typically portrayed as a serious threat. But I will give him a lot of credit here because he's a great worker. And he was bumping his ass off here. So credit to him, because a lot of that has to do with him going up for it. But this was just a monstrous chokeslam. It looked like he just got wrecked on the landing. And we have the Terror Twins standing tall. Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley here to close out the segment. The crowd was super hot for all of this. Priest nearly got his hands on, I mean, technically he got his hands on Balor, but didn't really get to do anything to him. Balor was able to escape. Rhea Ripley also got her hands technically on Liv Morgan, but didn't really get to do much to her. She was able to get away. Dominic got away completely. There was no interaction whatsoever with her and Dom on this show. They're making us wait for it. And because there's no need to rush. What are you going to do? You're going to just blow it all off in one night and have Priest lay out Balor and have Rhea kick Dom's ass? Like, no. People are going to be dying to see it. People are going to be dying to see it. Everybody, look, I've been talking about this Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, Dominic Mysterio triangle now, and how many eyeballs are on this on social media when they take the clips and post them on YouTube, on TikTok, Instagram, right? They're loving this because it's getting a lot of interest. It's getting a lot of traction. I saw Vanessa Hudgens. I guess she may have been at SummerSlam. I don't know. But apparently on her Instagram, she posted what looked like an image from the crowd as Dom and Liv were leaving at the end of her match on Saturday. And even she was commenting on like how crazy this story is, right? Like, this story has just taken over. And part of what makes it so successful is that they're milking it, but it's like drip, drip, drip a little bit more each week. They're going to drag this out as long as they possibly can. Now, it's clear based on this segment, we're going to get a mixed tag team match, probably in Berlin. If I had to guess, it's going to be in Berlin. It'll be Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley against Dominic and Liv Morgan. That's going to be the match. Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley should not be in the ring together again in a one-on-one situation for that title until Bad Blood. And if they do more than one Hell in a Cell match on that show, one men's, one women's, there's your women's Hell in a Cell match. It's going to be Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. But Rhea and Dom, there's something there too, where you've got to build to Rhea just kicking the shit out of him. And, you know, hitting him with a riptide, maybe through the announce desk or something. Yeah, they got to build to that too. In another time, in another era of WWE, they would have been able to do a Rhea Ripley-Dominic Mysterio match. There's a way to do that match that works even now. I just don't know if they have the balls to do it. You know, with their sponsors and everything. Look, it's a different day now in WWE. They're dropping, you know, son of a bitch and shit and asshole and all these words that you didn't hear a lot over the last 10 years on WWE television. They're being a lot looser about that stuff now. And you're going into the Netflix era as well. And yeah, you had Braun Strowman the other day who did an interview and said that, you know, a lot of them in the back are just waiting. They're waiting and taking bets when they get on Netflix to see who's going to be the first person to drop that F-bomb and everything. And it's not going to happen. Unless you're The Rock. This idea that they're going to go to Netflix and it's going to be F-bombs galore every single week. Apparently, even some of the wrestlers believe this. Like, no, that's not the way it's going to be. But they're not going to have the kind of handcuffs they have on USA Network or on Fox. And so, why not? Why not build to a Rhea Ripley-Dominic Mysterio match? Like, I personally, I'm not a big fan of, like, intergender matches. Like, if there's a story for it, it could work. But just doing it, I'm just generally not a fan of it. But man, if ever there was a time to do it in WWE, this is it. And you can make that match work. I'm just saying. I just don't think that they have the guts to actually do it. In the back, we saw Damage Control. Dakota Kai was about to make her way out for a singles match. And they were attacked by Sonya Deville, Shayna Baszler, and Zoe Stark. And in particular, they targeted Dakota's knee, her previously surgically repaired knee, and told her to stay out of their business. After a break, Sonya came to the ring for her match and said there would be no match because Dakota Kai was a bit under the weather. Io Sky entered with Kairi in her corner for the match instead. Sonya continued the tradition here in this match that was kicked off on Saturday, of going shoulder first into the ring post. Do you know that they did that spot in 5 consecutive matches on Saturday? And I think they did it in 6 out of the 7 matches. Fucking ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. How could there be no communication between the people who were putting these matches together? Like, hey, maybe don't do that. We're doing that in our match. Or it's going to, like in the Rhea match, right? It directly played into the story of her shoulder. Like, maybe don't do that. So we had it again here. Into the ring post she goes. Io and Kairi both went up top at the same time. Io hit a moonsault onto Deville and Baszler while Kairi took out Zoe with an insane elbow. Io put Sonya back in the ring and then hit her with her over the moonsault and picked up the win. I hope Dakota Kai is not hurt again, and that's the reason why they took her out of this match. I really hope that's not the case, because next week it's going to be Io and Kairi against Shayna and Zoe in a number one contenders match. And in the match graphic, they didn't even have Dakota in the graphic. You know, like she's going to be in their corner. She just wasn't even featured. So I take that as a bad sign, but hopefully I'm wrong. hopefully she's okay. But that didn't feel like a good sign to me. They did that once with Tegan Nox in NXT. And this was after she had already had two different ACL tears. They shot an angle where, you know, she was taken out. And it was a cover because she had to have knee surgery again. Backstage, Ilya Dragunov was talking to Sami Zayn and reminded him that he was a champion who inspired other people. And Sami looked very sad. He thanked him and said that Ilya would be a great champion one day too. Dragunov left. Jey Uso entered. Jey tried to cheer up Sami, and Sami said, man, you know, this loss, it feels like it's just a hard pill to swallow. And Jey said that he would get his rematch, you'll get your belt back. Sami was faking it, though. He said, actually, he's in a good mood, because he talked to Adam Pearce about getting his rematch next week with Bron Breakker. And they are having a match next week. It's going to be 2 out of 3 falls. They flashed it on the screen, so I was thinking, what's the stipulation was? 2 out of 3 falls for the Intercontinental title on Raw next week. Sami Zayn and Bron Breakker. Hey, at least that guarantees we're going to get more than 5 minutes. They only got 5 minutes at SummerSlam. So now we're going to get a much longer match, probably in the main event, if I had to venture a guess, with the two of them next week. And then Jey said that Sami would end up being a double champion, because not only is he going to win back his Intercontinental title, but they have unfinished business with the Judgment Day. And so what they're going to do is go after the tag team titles. And then Sami Zayn can be a double champion. I'm not sure where that leaves them for the Bloodline story, but they have to be a part of that story. I mean, Jey for sure. But I've come around to the idea that Sami may be involved in it as well. And now it's just a matter of, you know, how do you work them into it? I still think there could be something there in this interaction with Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis and trades and favors being done. That would be the easiest way to get them over to SmackDown. Maybe it's not going to happen as soon as I thought, but I still think that's ultimately where this all leads. Now we got another Wyatt 6 video. Uh-oh. Get the VHS ready here. This time it was Joe Gacy featured in the video. He had his back to the camera while Uncle Howdy was talking and said that they kept him locked away. And Howdy said that they would make them all pay for their sins, and then Gacy yelled into the camera once his face was shown. This was another forgettable entry in the series here, this has not been nearly as good since the videos for Bo Dallas and Eric Rowan. Ever since then, it's been all downhill. It's been a very weak effort. Like the Nikki Cross video was nothing, and the Dexter video, and now this. They basically just gave up on these videos, which is too bad, because I think that they could have explored things a little bit more with some of these characters, but it is what it is. I assume then that ends the VHS series here. There you go. See, we do things the right way here on this stream. We have all the effects. I can't tell you how many VHS tapes I have that look like that, because I ran them back. I rewound them so many times. They have tracking lines on them now. Well, I have one VCR left. I don't even know when the last time I used it, so probably won't ever watch these tapes again, but just funny. When you would watch something that many times and rewind it, I remember rewinding the end of one of the WrestleManias so many times, and it just got to the point where it's almost unwatchable now. Like, it just wears down the tape when you do it so many times. Just funny. Now everything is just digital. You don't have to worry about it. So we had Chad Gable, Julius Creed, and Brutus Creed. They were shown walking backstage, walking and talking, cutting a promo, Gable was, as he was making his way out for the main event. Gable talked about having a new family now, and he said they would take care of the freak show. Gable dubbed his new group American Made, and they made their entrance for the main event. They also have a new theme song, a new patriotic-sounding theme song. Then came the Wyatt 6 entrance, and it started with a lantern sitting on a rocking chair on the stage. We had the single piano key that they had been playing every single time somebody makes an entrance, or the Wyatt Six make an entrance. The single piano key, though, turned into Bray Wyatt's Shatter theme, the full theme. The full Shatter theme by Code Orange. I love that they went with the full theme for this. I kind of figured they would. I didn't think they were going to forever have the one fucking piano key. But you never know. I mean, the way things work now with Def Rebel, everybody always gets new music. So I was like, oh my God, God only knows what music they're going to end up with. Thankfully, though, they went with the Bray Wyatt theme, which I think was the right move. So Uncle Howdy walks out with the rest of the group. He picks up the lantern as they're walking down to the ring. And they stopped near ringside. Nikki Cross sat down on the ground in front of Howdy as he took a seat in the rocking chair, Bray Wyatt style, to watch the match. That's where he sat for the duration of the match. And the fans are watching all this, and they start a "This is awesome" chant. So the fans were into the presentation here. They were into the entrance. And the other members of the group rushed the ring and cleared American Made to the floor. It was Eric Rowan, Dexter Lumis with his new dreadlocks, and Joe Gacy, who looks like he slimmed down from the last time I saw him in NXT, against Chad Gable and the Creed brothers. Rowan, Gacy, and Lumis, they all took their masks off before they wrestled, so they are not wrestling with their masks. Lumis's teammates powerbombed him out of the ring onto American Made outside. Gable had control over Gacy after a commercial break. We don't know how or why. He just did. And the crowd was chanting, "We want Rowan." And it hit me in that moment. You know, we went in the span of 48 hours from "We want Roman" to "We want Rowan." What a difference 48 hours can make. Rowan got the hot tag. He ran wild. He paid tribute to Brody Lee with a slingshot senton from the apron into the ring. Gable gave Rowan a stalling German suplex for a two count. Gacy and Lumis each hit Julius and Brutus with uranagis onto the announce desk. That left Gable all alone in the ring. Gacy powerbombed Lumis onto Gable. Lumis then followed with the top rope splash for the win. And I'm just thinking, man, poor Chad. Still taking losses and eating pins. You know, there was a time where I used to call Bray Wyatt the eater of pins. Because he would talk a big talk. He would have these great spooky promos. And he would threaten people. John Cena, The Undertaker, Randy Orton, Kane, all these different people. And then he would lose. He can never follow through. He would always lose. He was the eater of pins. That's what Chad Gable has become. Chad Gable is the eater of pins. You look at this new family he has, right? Same as the old family. Not really having a lot of success here right out of the gate with his new family. Uncle Howdy was pleased. He got into the ring. He posed with the rest of the crew as the show ended. They posed around the lantern as the show cut out. This was a good first night for the Wyatt Six. The presentation I thought was A+. The match itself was more like a B. But each member got a chance to shine. Rowan had his moment in the sun. Dexter Lumis, Joe Gacy was running wild there for a little bit. They needed this win. Arguably, they needed it even more than Chad Gable because they're the new group. I mean, I guess they're technically both new groups, but the Wyatt Six has not yet been fully established on this show. This is their first match. You can't have them lose their first match. So it was more important here for them to get the win. Again, this was not really about Gable and the Creeds. The focus here was on the Wyatt Six. It was all about them. You know, same city 11 years later from the formation of the original Wyatt family to this new iteration of the Wyatt family under a different name. That's really what it was all about. I thought they were successful in that. Now, what I hope that we don't see is Chad Gable continuing to be a jobber to the stars. He got the main event spot on the show tonight, so that's great. It's a good spot for him to be in. But he really needs to start stringing together some wins. Especially if they want him to lead this new group. Right, you want this group to have some credibility. You don't want all of his losing to rub off on the Creeds. So I think it's very important that they start to, you know, feed him some wins And yet I don't have a lot of hope about that, because what do you think the next big match is going to be for Chad Gable? It's going to be Uncle Howdy. You think Uncle Howdy is going to lose to Chad Gable? Of course not. So he's going to lose again. At what point does he begin to win? That's what I'd like to know. So they have to figure out a way to change that. But that aside, again, I thought the show itself was, this was as strong of an episode of Raw as I have seen this entire year. They had a lot of momentum coming out of that SummerSlam show on Saturday. They had a lot of buzz. There was a lot of big moments on that show. Very newsworthy show. Four championships changed hands. Two betrayals. The return of Roman Reigns. There was a lot going on. And so it helps shake things up on the weekly shows when you do that. That's what I really liked about SummerSlam this year. It meant that when we go into Raw and SmackDown this week, it's like a whole new world now, right? New champions, new faces, new heels. Some people go in heels, some people go in babyface. It just shakes things up at a time when I felt like they really needed to shake things up. So this was one of their best weekly shows of the entire year. It was focused. It progressed a lot of the stories coming out of SummerSlam. It started some new ones, and it introduced us to at least one new face in the form of Odyssey Jones. I wish every Raw could be like this, honestly. They're going to have their chance because they're going to be back on USA next week, and we shall see where things go. But we now know what the World Heavyweight Championship match is going to be in Berlin. It's going to be Gunther and Randy Orton. The Wyatt Six get their first win under their belt here. CM Punk and Drew McIntyre continuing their feud. Seth Rollins being transitioned into a new one with Bronson Reed. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. Something going on there. We could be getting a split soon of the New Day. We're definitely getting a split soon of Awesome Truth. So you see, even something like Shayna and Zoe and Sonya against Damage Control, right? Not terribly interesting, but it gives them something to do on the show. Triple H is trying to find a role for everybody on this show on a consistent basis. Consistency is the key. They have to be on the show every single week. One of the things that he has proven to be very good at so far in his booking run is long-term storytelling and tying things back to past events. And it's the sort of thing that when you ultimately get the payoff to a story, it's that much more satisfying when it's been playing out over a period of months or a year, and they can point to moments that happened, even as far back as a year ago or more, that make you go, holy shit, I forgot about that. Or, you know what? Wow, I didn't even notice that. And sometimes it's the little things that really just make it that much more enjoyable. It's that form of storytelling that I love, you know, when it comes to these shows. And right now, Raw is firing on all cylinders. If tonight was any indication, if we can get shows similar to this one every single week, Raw will be back to the way it was, you know, a month or two ago, and they were really firing on all cylinders. And I hope SmackDown can find that same momentum on Friday, because SmackDown has been fucking boring over the last 3 weeks. So hopefully they can also, you know, knock out a huge show on Friday. I'm waiting also to see what the update is on Jacob Fatu, whether or not it really was just a sell job with his leg at SummerSlam, or if he maybe tweaked it or did injure himself. I still don't know for sure one way or the other. We should find out on Friday if he's there. And if he is, if he's still wearing that walking boot that he was in the other day. But Roman Reigns is going to be back on Friday, and so we will hear from him. That should pop a big number for them on Friday. I would expect tonight to get a big number as well, although I guess they're still competing against the Olympics, so we'll see. But again, just remember, they're back on USA Network next week. What did you think of Raw? Holy shit, look at this. 94% thumbs up score for Monday Night Raw. 6% thumbs down with 1,600 votes and counting in so far. When was the last time Raw had 94% thumbs up? I have no idea. See, when I tell you that it was the best Raw of the year, it may well end up being the best Raw all year. At Solomonster on X is where you can go ahead and vote in the poll. Jarrett, yes. That's why I said Jacob had a walking boot on. I saw the same photos you did. Believe me, brother. You don't got to worry about me. It's my job to be up on all this stuff. I'm well aware. I saw that 2 days ago. All right, let's go through your messages here. Thank you all for the super chat love so far. You could still send them on in if you would like, and I will read them here. I'm going to start out with our early ones. I'm going to start off with the real CS02 with the 499 says, I think we know who's the next victim for the Wyatt Six after Gable. If I were Dominic, I would run as far away as possible. Ah, yes, because the Wyatt Six does not like people who betray their family, right? They do not like people who betray others. So Dominic would be an easy target for them. I guess you could also say Finn Balor would, though, no? You say the same thing about Finn. Leo Franco. I'm a fan of Cody, but am I alone in thinking that his run so far is meh at best? I think it might be the result of seeming like no one wants the title. Besides AJ and Solo, no one is fighting for a shot. Randy is challenging Gunther, not Cody. It's as though no one wants his title. KO, Randy, Knight, Hayes, Andrade, they don't come out asking. Thoughts? I mean, you could say that about, you know, any champion, really. Why wouldn't everybody on the roster want to come out? And this is, by the way, this is a problem in not just WWE. I mean, I levied the same criticism against AEW. I mean, they had this Owen Hart tournament for a main event championship match at Wembley Stadium, and MJF comes back a month before. You would think he'd be first in line declaring himself, given the fact that the last time we saw him, he was the world champion and got fucked out of his title. Why wouldn't he want to be in the Owen Hart tournament? Right? Well, because they didn't want him in there. That's why. They had other ideas for it. But storyline-wise, it's ridiculous. Right? It's just one of those things where you got to suspend your disbelief sometimes. I think that Cody has had a good run so far. I think he had a better run than Damian Priest had before he lost his title on Saturday. I love the matches he had with AJ Styles. There, you know, it's tough, though. There was always going to be a come-down period because this story of his was built up for 2 years, and they finally paid it off at WrestleMania with the big match with Roman Reigns. There was nothing coming out of WrestleMania that they were going to be able to do that was going to be able to top that or match that. And so now we're in August. Solo Sikoa, again, that's not the person I wanted to see him in the ring with at SummerSlam. I mean, I agree, it was an excuse to get Roman Reigns back. But now they've got to figure out, okay, Roman's back, and we really need to come up with something good for Cody because we don't want him to just be, you know, the backup quarterback here. He's our champion. Well, with Randy being preoccupied now with Gunther for the next month, Cody's going to defend his title in Berlin. Who's it going to be against? I'm a little worried it could be a rematch with Solo Sikoa. I sure as fuck hope not. But I'm not really sure. Honestly, I'm not sure who else. I know AJ is going to be back on SmackDown this Friday, but you can't go back to AJ Styles. And you have Logan Paul, who already wrestled Cody in Saudi Arabia. It's not going to be him. Andrade and Hayes are fighting for the right, it feels like, to challenge eventually for the U.S. title that Knight now has. Kevin Owens, you could do you could do Cody and Owens. You know, babyface and babyface. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do on Friday or who I'm missing from the SmackDown roster that I could reasonably see in that spot. But if Randy Orton is coming over from SmackDown to challenge for the World Heavyweight title, you have to think there's a chance that maybe somebody from Raw goes over to SmackDown to challenge Cody for his. And even then, I'm not sure who that would be. I'm just not sure right now. Kevin Owens would seem to be the one that makes the most sense. And it doesn't mean he has to go heel to do it. But if not Kevin Owens, I'm just, you know, offhand, I'm just not sure who that would be. HBKC83, main roster-wise, was that JD McDonagh's best match? I think so, yeah. I think so. Prince Vegeta says, you'd think with how good Roman's return was received and Randy Orton busy in Berlin, the WWE is going to throw the WWE title back on Roman. No. Roman Reigns is not getting the WWE title back. LC Killer says, Bray Wyatt will be proud. I think Bray would be very happy that Bo is in a prime spot on TV. I think he loved his brother, wanted to work with him, wanted to bring him into the story in the Uncle Howdy role to help, you know, give him something to do. And the fact that not only is he in a good spot, but that he's able to carry on this legacy and these characters that Bray, you know, conceived, I think he would be very proud. Donnie Yasu, I know it's only August, but 2024 has had more consistently enjoyable Raws and SmackDowns than I could remember. It's nice, isn't it? It's nice. You know, when you think back to all the years of just absolute fucking dog shit that we had to sit through and the inconsistency in quality of the shows, it's nice, for the most part, to have a consistency to them that is good. It makes you actually want to tune into the show. DEH says, Motor City Machine Guns, Stephanie Vicaire, Julia, and Lucha Bros for NXT's CW debut. Well, that would be a hell of a lineup if it works out that way. Big Show's ladder. Do you know what's going on with Dragon Lee? He was all over the shop, back around Survivor Series, and then it's like they stopped caring overnight. Have I missed something obvious, like he is hurt? I don't know if it's an injury or a visa issue. There's got to be something going on, though, with him. I don't think it's an injury. I think maybe it is a visa issue. Maybe it has something to do with that. I just can't imagine what else it would be. It's just, he was getting a nice little push out of the gate there, and I don't think he did anything wrong. I mean, it's not like he's being punished, as far as anybody knows. It's just weird, and I haven't heard anything about any injury. Devin from NJ, has Solo ever noticed that Punk doesn't follow the typical wrestler immediately stops talking when music hits when interrupted? Why is this? Because he's CM Punk, and he can do what he wants. When you're a big star, you get to do that. Amiibo Juice, hope everybody recognized McDonough's talent tonight. I did. I did on that fucking chokeslam. What a bump. Carlos Galvan, I believe that Triple H after SummerSlam wanted a bowl of cereal, grabbed the milk, and saw Odyssey Jones' picture on the side and remembered him. Maybe so. Maybe Triple H went to go make himself a bowl of Frosted Flakes, and he saw his face on the side and said, holy shit, I forgot that we have this guy under contract. I better use him. Do they even have that anymore? Is that like a thing that they have? Missing kids' faces on the side of milk cartons. I mean, that's been a trope for like years, but like, do they even do that anymore? I never bought a container of milk and saw anybody's face on the side of it, you know? Seen a couple of cows, but that's about it. NWO Matt kicks off the Learning Tree train 2 hours ago. Thank you, Matt. Raph says, Rhea, saving Priest is better than hurting Dom and Liv more. Good. Yeah. No need to give it all away in one night. Got to tease it out. Tease it out. It'll mean more when the moment finally happens. Alex with the $22 super chat. Brother Solo, with Orton focusing on the world title, is it possible we get the eventual Cody and Rock match at the Royal Rumble? And then Rock focuses on Roman at WrestleMania 41, leading to the start of the Orton and Cody program at 41. Rock wrestling anywhere but WrestleMania is highly unlikely. So I'm going to say no. Raph says, never been happier to hear a second piano note play. This journey called life, I love the new version of the Judgment Day. All right, so we got one fan here of the new version of the Judgment Day. But do you think that they should add anybody? Should they add anybody to replace Damian Priest? I don't mean as like the leader, but just add somebody new. I don't know. You know, it's too bad that Malachi Black's contract is not up. If he wanted to go back to WWE, I think he'd be perfect fit for a group like this. Ragnarok, happy Monday, Brother Solo. Buy or sell? on which led to the best television, The Shield or the OG Bloodline? What led to the best television was the OG Bloodline. I mean, as far as a faction, when it comes to, you know, matches and the way they were booked right out of the gate, Shield is tops for me. I love the Shield. But, yeah, the Bloodline has provided better television. Hype Man Slimy, can you imagine the pot when Rhea Riptides Dominic? Oh, it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. Again, I really wish they would do a match, like an actual match. Rhea's like, no. I want you in the ring. That's what they should do. Hisco 95, was that Tsunami angle and Reed meant to take Seth off TV for a while or to start a feud and keep Rollins busy while Punk and Drew is still going? You got it right there in the second half. That's exactly why they did it. Aaron with the $50 bomb. Loved how they moved Seth away from Punk and Drew for now with Bronson. Also, I love seeing that Damian and Rhea have their babyface moment. The reaction from the crowd was great. Overall, an amazing episode. Hisco 95 with a $12 super chat says, and another question. You call Cody and Roman 1A and 1B on Saturday. Do you think they're the modern equivalent of Stone Cold and The Rock as far as them being the two biggest baby faces and draws in the company? I will say that they are the two biggest baby faces and draws in the company. That is correct. I do not make any comparisons to Rock and Austin because that is unfair to anybody to be compared to Rock and Austin. It is similar in that WWE is very fortunate to have two people as over as they are and selling the merch that they sell at the same time on the same show. So they're very fortunate to have that, like they were very fortunate to have that in Rock and Austin. But I'm not going to compare their drawing ability or star power to Rock and Austin. I'll just leave it at that. The Carlosis, wonder who put up or who you would put up against the Wyatt Six going forward, particularly as a face group. Very interested to see the direction they go with them. I would think at some point there's got to be a meeting between them and the Judgment Day. Rodimus Prime, a grade A show, especially the Wyatt Six. Not going to lie, it had me in the feels a little bit. It was nice to hear Bray's theme again. You know, he didn't get to use it very often, so it would have been kind of a waste not to bring it back. Aaron with another 20. Kurt Angle has talked about being a manager on his podcast, not saying it'll happen, but I would love to see him with the new American-made team eventually. I mean, if he could hold up to it physically, then I think that'd be fun. But, you know, physically, I don't know him being on the road and him doing stuff. I don't know. I don't know if it's something he would want to do or if it's something he feels like he could do. NWO Matt says Orton needs to sit under the learning tree. William Valencia with the 10th spot. Priest was giving Dominic Toretto vibes with all the family references and the black tank top with the cross necklace. You know, I didn't realize it, but now that you mention it, I can't unsee it. There was a little Fast and the Furious influence there. Derek J. Speaks. Would you have Orton beat Cody for the belt when they meet? Perhaps at Bad Blood in Atlanta, Cody's hometown. Cody could get it back a month or so later. I would, yes. I would have Randy Orton win the title. And that would be, would that be 14 or 15 for him? I think 15, right? Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having Orton win it, and then a few months later, Cody could win it back. Are they going to do that if the plan is Cody and Rock? Probably not. I mean, if Rock wants it where Cody doesn't lose the title, he's held it the entire time, and now I'm back, and I'm going to be the one to take it from him. Rock takes precedent over everything and everybody, and whatever he wants, usually he gets. right? The only reason he did not get his match with Roman Reigns this year is because he realized that people were saying bad things about him. And ultimately, he made the call to step aside. But in the end, Rock is going to do what Rock's going to do. And so if that's the way he wants the story to play out, then Cody will not lose the belt. But I think he should. And then he can get it back. NWO Matt. Priest and Rhea should have sat under the learning tree. They would have won and never been betrayed. I guess that's what was missing the whole time. The Vortex of Jericho. Aquarius Know-It-All shouts to Odyssey Jones for the old school Mr. Hughes Bossman Sidewalk Slam. Dude looks like an agile Mark Henry. Just don't call him OJ. Is that an inside joke that I'm unaware of? Yeah, Odyssey Jones, like I said, man, he has big star potential if he can stay healthy. Because I know he also, in NXT, I think he had a pretty significant knee injury. I want to say it was, I don't think it was an ACL. I think it was something with his kneecap or something. Something, he was gone for a long time. Because he's carrying around a lot of weight. If he can stay healthy, I think he could be a big star for them. Dr. War God. Well, incredibly enough, they turned the Judgment Day into a jobber stable. That said, we all have to give Bronson Reed his flowers for his star-making monster performance. That was awesome. That was awesome. That was the best part of Raw tonight. And I would not call the Judgment Day a jobber faction, considering that the tag team champions and the women's champion are now part of that faction. Prince Vegeta, how would you feel about a champion against champion match at Survivor Series, Cody against Gunther, play off their Royal Rumble Final 2 history? I do not want to go back to Raw versus SmackDown. Ian Noel Camelo, Chicago Screamer here. With all the factions there are now, what are your thoughts on making a two-night pay-per-view by making War Games Night 1 and Survivor Series Night 2? Hope to see you at Hog in Chicago. Yes, I hope to see you there as well. No, I don't think you want to do that. I think it just muddies the water too much. You got to stick with one or the other. Somebody on the stream the other night had an interesting suggestion where maybe they kind of tweak the rules of War Games a little bit and incorporate the elimination aspect into it instead of it being just one fall to a finish. And I kind of like that idea. I wouldn't be against that. Like trying that out one year, having Survivor Series elimination rules in a War Games match. But doing two nights and doing both gimmicks, like I don't like that idea. You can't do that. WWE Wrestling and Gaming, gold or silver? In the spirit of the Olympics. Thugonomics Cena or 2015 Cena? And 2015 Cena? I was a fan of Thugonomics Cena, but 2015 Cena had that great U.S. title open challenge. I gotta give the gold to Thugonomics Cena. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett. As a fellow New Yorker, I just like to say I appreciate Damian Priest's promos tonight. You can truly see he has accentuated his New York pride. That's right. He is, after all, street trash, according to Gunther. And Gunther beat him and proved him right. Jeremy Rose, Miz Truth. The Miz Truth thing is stale. Heel turn for Truth would be great. Maybe realizing that everybody is laughing at him for the wrong reasons. A serious Truth would be nice. Maybe joining Judgment Day for real. That would be awesome. I do not expect that to happen. It would be a nice swerve if he went heel and not Miz, but I don't get the sense that's going to happen. Jerome Eugenio, which is the bigger geek faction, Final Testament or American Made? Well, I believe the Final Testament has been... How long has the Final Testament been around for? And I know they've at least won a couple of matches. So far, American Made has had one match and they have lost their first match together. So right now, American Made are the bigger geeks, but you got to give it time. They've literally been together officially for one night. So I don't want to go too hard on them yet. Alex says, if Jacob Fatu has to be out for an extended period of time, can you expect Roman Reigns to make more consistent appearances than he normally would? No. Fatu being hurt or not will not have any impact on Roman's schedule in the least. At least nothing noticeable where it's going to feel like, wow, he's on the show so much more often. Like, one has nothing to do with the other. Oz and Glorious tried potato leek soup over the weekend. It was awesome and super easy to make. I have never tried that. I have had all kinds of chicken soup. I've had lobster bisque. I've had, although I had to stop. I can't have cheese anymore, so much for that. But I'm trying to think. I mean, there's been some other soups I've had that I've liked. There are some restaurants I've been to that have like split pea. That's got like a certain thickness to it. Some places are good because they'll throw like a whole bunch of stuff in there. They'll put chicken, they'll put shrimp. You know, it's like, it's great. It's like a nice little like medley of stuff. But as somebody who loves Chinese food, for me, it's chicken noodle soup first. And then as far as Chinese food, wonton. I'm a wonton guy. I'm not an egg drop guy. I'm a wonton guy. Wonton soup is the shit. I'll be having that tomorrow night. That'll be my my pre-TNT meal before the show tomorrow night. Raph says, as a Raphael, I hated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles due to the endless jokes. See, I feel differently. I kind of feel like I would have been like really happy if I was named after one of the Ninja Turtles. Like if I were named Leonardo and people were like bringing up the Ninja Turtles all the time when I was a kid, I'd be like, fuck yeah. Leonardo was my favorite one because, you know, he wore the blue sash, right? Blue's my favorite color. I would have looked at that and said, man, that's pretty badass. I got the same name as one of the Ninja Turtles. And anybody who would have made fun of me, you know what you should have said to them? You should have told them, go fuck yourself. And then taken out your katana and slit their throat. You would have been the coolest kid in school. Ian Noel Camelotes. Boy, this got dark real quick. If the Wyatt Six continue to sustain their popularity, what direction do you think they would go after their current feud? Can it even reach a feud with the... No. Final Test. If you want to kill the group, you put them with the Final Test. Judgment Day, I think, would be the way to go. Final Testament, if they give up on the Wyatt Six, that's what you do. I don't see how that's going to help the Wyatt Six. Hoffenheim, Judgment Day is really international. Two Latinos, two Irish guys, and an Italian woman. Retro KOH, if they are American-made, Chad and the Creed should adopt Hulk Hogan's old WCW theme. You know, I was thinking the same thing, because it's actually a pretty badass theme. I don't know who has the rights to it, though. I don't think it's WWE. Oz and Glorious, Odyssey Jones, a Logan Paul-esque bigot, hard pass. Well, you must know stuff that I don't, but okay. The Juliet says, the Odyssey of Odyssey Jones is over. Yes, that's right. The Odyssey of Odyssey Jones is indeed over. Solo is confusing Leonardo with Raphael. No. Leonardo was the best one. Leonardo was the blue turtle. Raphael was the red. Michelangelo was the orange. Donatello was the purple. And you had the giant rat. You had the shredder. You had Bebop. You had Rocksteady. You had Baxter Stockman. You had the lizard man. I forgot what his name was, but... Casey Jones and April O'Neil. Telling you, man, that was my jam when I was a kid. Brandon Vasquez, I taped Backlash 2000 and recorded it on VHS. I rewound Austin's return so many times. I watched and recorded pay-per-views from Armageddon 99 through Survivor Series 01. I wish I still had those tapes. Yeah, I had all the same things that you did. Mike... No Dragunov, though. Come on, H. Well, I mean, he had a little appearance on the show tonight. I have faith that they are going to find something for him to do soon. You know, I like what he's been doing with the show as far as trying to find things for people to do, by and large. That's not always the case with the women. But Dragunov, I think, is going to be okay. Oh, Krang, of course. How could I forget Krang? Oh, my God. The Technodrome. That's right. Leatherhead. Thank you. I just couldn't remember his name. Leatherhead. Had all the foot soldiers. Slappin' 45. Not a fan of creating a new stable and beating them immediately. They need to book American Made strong going forward and put tag gold on them at least. Grant Hudson. Solo, did you see that tweet yesterday about Hunter thinking going back to WWF name? There's no way in hell that can actually happen, right? First of all, I didn't see that tweet. I don't know what tweet you're referring to. And no. No, they cannot. It just wouldn't make any sense. They could have used the name in this country, but not internationally. It doesn't make sense to call yourself one thing in the U.S. and have to call yourself a different name everywhere else. So that's why they just said, fuck it, we'll just change the name of the company altogether. It wouldn't make sense for them to do it that way. That's why they changed their name in the first place. And honestly, it's been 20 years. They've established the WWE name. Even as a guy who grew up a WWF fan, and I hated when the name change happened, it's been 20 plus years. Like, let it go. You know? Jace, are you in favor of Gunther holding the title for a year? What about losing at WrestleMania? If so, I think Jey Uso should win the Rumble because I think there is a story there. I have no interest in seeing Jey Uso go to WrestleMania and win the World Heavyweight title. And yes, I think Gunther losing at WrestleMania is fine. He does not have to have a full year as champion. Nick Grosso, what happened to Kiana James? She made two appearances on Raw and then just disappeared. Well, that's what I'm referring to when I mentioned just now that Triple H is not always consistently giving the women on the show TV time. Kiana James was called up in the draft. She made about two appearances on the show, and we have not seen her since. That has to change. Also, do you think Becky Lynch should return as a heel? Because I don't see her playing second to Rhea. No, I think when she comes back, she should be a babyface and then just evaluate what their needs are at that time. I don't know when she's going to come back. Everybody went ballistic yesterday that she announced her retirement. And then I'm like, I have to go see what this comment is that she made. And then I saw the comment and I said, do these people not realize like her biography aired on TV last night? There was nothing in the comment she made that indicated at all to me that she was retiring. But this is what happens. You know, people on the internet, they read what they want to read and they run rampant with it. It's just idiotic. So for those wondering what that was all about, it was much ado about nothing. She's not retiring. She'll come back when she's good and ready. And when she comes back, if they have a need for a top heel in the women's division, then she could go heel. But I think she comes back as a baby. Jace says the new Judgment Day are just not intimidating. I think they need a muscle guy, an enforcer type. Bronson could be a good one. What do you think? Well, that's why I made the comment about, you know, maybe adding another member here, because Damian Priest filled a certain role in that group that now is vacant. You know, it's certainly not going to be filled by Carlito. Bronson Reed, I could see that, maybe. I could see Bronson Reed. Justin G, over under on Joe Hendry doing a Gable American Made. I'm going to go under, but that would be entertaining. Call in Bad Luck Fale, oh my God. Yeah, let's not do that. Javier316, hey Solo, do you remember a guy that goes by the name of Brock Lesnar? I think so. I think he won a few titles. Maybe Brock. How about Brock as the new enforcer of the Judgment Day? You know what, though? You got to admit, it would be entertaining if Brock were to come in, be part of the Judgment Day, and then, like, boss around Carlito and Dom. And they're all, like, they're also, like, when they're in the clubhouse, like, he redecorates the clubhouse. Now he's got, like, a moose head on the fucking wall. Remember that episode of Raw where he was, like, refusing to go out to the ring? And he was sitting in the back and he was reading these magazines, like hunting magazines and gun magazines. He's going to redecorate the clubhouse. It's going to be stacked with magazines like that. Fucking animal heads on all the walls. You know what? I think there's a way to make it entertaining. We've already had serious Brock. Brock can still be serious, but you can inject a little humor into it too. I think it could be very entertaining. See, I think there's a germ of an idea there. He would have to be convinced to join the group. What would his incentive be to join the Judgment Day? That's the only thing I don't know the answer to that. I have to figure that out. Reading the Sable Playboys. No. I mean, that could be one of the segments where, you know, he comes into the clubhouse and Dom is like looking at an old Sable Playboy and Liv gets upset and Brock's ready to, like, murder him. You know, that was going to be the match at Elimination Chamber this year. They were going to have Dominic eliminate Brock from the Royal Rumble. And then he was going to wrestle Brock at Elimination Chamber. And then Brock would have gone on to wrestle Gunther at WrestleMania. That was the plan. We were deprived of Brock and Dom. I mean, we had Brock and Dom, I guess, kind of, when Brock feuded with Ray back in 2019. But that was different, though. I mean, that, first of all, I don't think they had an actual match. And that was a very different Dominic than this one. BlissFan, congrats on 17 months of channel membership. And he is very upset that Alexa Bliss did not return tonight, which I was not expecting. I don't know why you were. Do I expect her back at some point? I do, but I still feel like it's not going to be for a little while. Like, it could still be a few months. Oz and Glorious, thoughts on Cobra Kai Season 6. I never finished Cobra Kai Season 1, not because I didn't enjoy the first episode. I just got pulled away from it after one episode, and I never went back to it. So, is it worth my time to go back and catch up with Cobra Kai? Oz and Glorious, hunting is for people that have piss fetishes, a.k.a. Brock. Okay. I guess that means Shawn Michaels has a piss fetish as well. Knowing him, he probably does. All the freaky shit he was probably doing back in the 90s. Please. Chris Mikesell, I hated when they blurred the WWF logo on the DVDs back in the day. They still do sometimes. They still blur the logo on some of the archive footage. But it's only certain types. Like, some of the block letter logos are okay, and then some they still blur out sometimes, and I'm not sure why. I don't know what the difference is. Cameron Spencer with the $4.99. Did you see the clip of a man jumping off of an 11th-floor cruise ship into the ocean? He almost drowned and barely survived. I did not. No, I did not see that. Was he on fire or something? Was he trying to put himself out? Why would he jump from 11 floors up into the ocean? Unless he wanted to die. Thank you for the super chat, love. I appreciate it. We are still rocking well over 1,600 people here. We are sitting at over 650 likes, which is awesome. So thank you for that. Let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
It is everybody's favorite segment. It is time. Let's do it. Let's kick things off with a good old school tag team match. Here we go. 650 likes and counting on a Monday night. That's what I like to see. I want to see a good match, too. I want to see top flight. Darius and Dante Martin is kicking us off here and Be the Booker. So see, I see this is going to be a very quick, fast-paced match, very high-flying match. Some might say a very flippy match. For those of you that like the flippiness, we're going to get a lot of flipping and diving. Because they are going to be taking on, well, not anymore, Finn Balor and Damian Priest of the Judgment Day. Oh, days gone by, man. This was from better times. Better times. Right now, things are very different with these two. They are former tag team champions. All right, women's Be the Booker. We begin with Tiffy Time. It is Tiffany Stratton, the brand new Money in the Bank winner, fresh off of her win last month and her brand new Money in the Bank briefcase. She will be a champion when she cashes in. Tiffany Stratton. I like where this is going. Tiffany Stratton one-on-one with Io Sky. You know, that could be a championship match one day on WWE television. Tiffany Stratton and Io Sky. Hey, you know what? The battle of the moonsaults. Who's got the better moonsault? Io or Tiffany? It sells itself, doesn't it? It's the one thing they have in common. The Battle of the Moonsaults. And now we only have one match to go. It all comes down to this. Let's hope we have magic fingers tonight. Mike Santana. I like this. This I like. Mike Santana, for those who don't know, has been killing it. Ever since he came back from that torn ACL, he decided to take a chance on himself and he wanted to break out as a single star. He's got his thing going right now in TNA, but he is our champion. He is the House of Glory world champion. And so I have had a bird's eye ringside view for all of his title defenses so far, and he has been fucking crushing it. Absolutely crushing it. And I do believe we will see him in WWE one day. I do. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on this guy, and they shouldn't be. So I like where this is headed. We have Mike Santana going one-on-one with... I don't know. Need a drum roll first. Mike Santana one-on-one with Bobby Lashley. You know, that could be a match in TNA one day, depending on where Bobby Lashley ends up. I could see Lashley and Santana being a match that takes place for the first time there, in that company. We got ourselves a clean sweep, isn't it? Did we get one on Saturday during the SummerSlam review? I think we did. I think that's back-to-back. When you hear the Sonic chime, I mean, you know it's a good night. Anyway, Devin from New Jersey. Do I agree with Roseanne that the cast of the Connors betrayed her by continuing the show without her? No. They have a job to do. She doesn't like it. Too fucking bad. I have no issue with it. I haven't been watching it, so I don't know if the show's any good or not, but the original Roseanne was a great show. The Connors I can't speak to, but I certainly don't see there being any issue with them continuing the show without her. So if she has an issue with it, that's too damn bad. Maze the Great. Notice that Kyrie and Io's outfits tonight were reminiscent of them as the Black Lotus Triad from Lucha Underground. Really? I had not noticed that. And I remember the Black Lotus Triad and their episodes of Lucha Underground. They were great. That was probably the first time I ever saw Io Sky, honestly. But I did not notice that tonight. So that's a good catch. Mr. Awesome says he and his mom could not get past 10 minutes. Of the Connors. Okay. For a moment there, I just, the context didn't hit me. Anyway, thank you guys. Thank you guys for all the love tonight. I will be live with you back here on this channel Wednesday night after Dynamite. And of course, after what should be a big SmackDown on Friday, half of which may end up being a fucking black screen. But we only have another month of Fox, and then we won't have to put up with it anymore, because on September 13th, SmackDown moves to USA. So only another 4 weeks or so, 5 weeks of Fox, and then we could be done with that. But you can catch me live tomorrow night over on JD's channel for Tuesday Night Titans. My God, do we have a lot to discuss tomorrow night. Including one topic, I'm sure, one topic in particular that we do not see eye to eye on, but we will talk about that on TNT tomorrow night. Thank you again. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great night. If you missed episode 873 of the podcast, please go check it out, as well as my SummerSlam review almost 3 hours from Saturday night. And come on back here on the channel on Wednesday, and we will talk AEW Dynamite. I'll see you guys on Wednesday.